Hi, this is Christopher Allen. I'm gonna try SIP again today. Looks like the voice line is down.
So I connected to the voice line just fine, Christopher.
Totally isn't answering.
it's random, apparently, or I got lucky.
Okay, so now we've got somebody on hold.
Should this meeting take place in an elevator to accommodate?
Okay, so our agenda today is I just posted into IRC. We begin with our normal statements around our calls. Anybody, first is the IP note. Anyone can participate in these calls. However, if you've not joined the W3C group's IP policy, we can't consider any substantive contributions. So we really encourage you, you're welcome to listen in and whatever, but if you want to participate in these calls, that you join the W3C credentials community group and agree to the IP policy. This meeting is being recorded, and everything said in this call is being archived. We also try to keep transcripts. We use IRC to cue the speakers during the call. There's IRC channel links in the agenda. If for some reason you're not able to use IRC, you can just speak up briefly. All attendees should type present plus to get your name on the attendee list and transcript. We use IRC to queue, so you can type Q plus to add yourself to the queue with an optional reminder Q plus and whatever your reminder is. If you're not on IRC, please ask to be put on the queue. In general, be brief with your comments so that the rest of the queue can get a chance to chime in. You can always Q plus again. We need a volunteer to be a scribe. We basically keep a list of people who've scribed in the past and rotate them around. So at the top of the list today, we have Adrian, Benjamin Young. Are either of you available to scribe today?
I did it last time.
Yeah.
Okay, well.
We need
yeah, somebody, stuff. Somebody
yeah,
didn't. Okay, so Benjamin Young and Bodan and Brent, you're also up in the queue. Any of you up for scribing? Dan Pate, Daniel Buchner, David Chadwick, are you up for scribing? David Lane, Dimitri Drummond, are you up for scribing? Jarlath, Jeff, Joe Kaplan, Jonathan Holt, are you up for scribing?
Yeah, I'll do it. It's John.
Okay.
I'll do my best.
Scribe is
done. The
I understand.
Yeah.
Okay, so Jonathan Holt is the scribe. Continuing down, let's see. Sorry, 1 second. Anybody know how the scribe command works? I'll do it that way for now. Okay. Introductions and reintroductions. So each week we ask if there are any new people participating in the call to speak up. Do we have anybody who's new to the CCG or our calls?
How about I'll reintroduce myself? This is Jonathan.
Okay, go ahead.
So Johnny Crunch is my hacker alias. I'm Jonathan Holt. I'm a clinician by training, a clinical geneticist with background in biomedical informatics. I'm involved in a few different startup companies. The latest one is Transcendex. Deals with identity, verifiable claims with physician credentialing, and ultimately cryptography for health records. I am also just recently named the chair of a working group for the IEEE with distributed ledger technology in healthcare, specifically focused on the subgroup for identity. Not quite sure how we're actually going to overlap and what the outcome is going to be for the specifications in the IEEE, but it should be cool.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. So announcements and reminders. So we have coming up at the end of the month on March 1st, 3rd in Barcelona, rebooting Web of Trust 8. If you're interested in registering for the event, it is at this URL. We've already begun to receive topics and advanced readings. It's a collaborative event, so we ask everybody, if possible, to post these. We also give a big discount on the event if you post one. So we encourage you to take a look at the topics and advanced readings there. Submit some of your own or comment on the ones that are there. It helps drive the agenda for the collaborative event. Associated with the event immediately before, there's going to be a public meetup on Thursday night. And then after the event, we're going to be having a verifiable claims working group face-to-face for 2 days on March 4th and 5th. So if you're interested in participating in that and are not a member of the verifiable claims working group, there is a little bit of logistics that needs to be gone through, something that requires normally W3C membership, but the chairs can invite experts to the meeting. So if you're going to stay in Barcelona for a couple extra days to help out the Verifiable Claims Working Group, which is getting close to a candidate recommendation, please let the chairs, Dan Burnett or Matt Stone, know. And they can get you in. Beyond that, in May, a number of us will be at the Internet, say April 30th through May 2nd in Mountain View, a number of us will be at the Internet Identity Workshop. Bern, go ahead.
Yes, this is Dan Burnett. I just wanted to add, we're pretty close to that event now, the Verifiable Claims Working Group face-to-face meeting, and so we would love to have you. I cannot guarantee that we can feed you at this point, only just because of how close we're getting and in terms of what we've prepared for food, but definitely if you're interested, please do contact either me or Matt Stone. You can find our email addresses in the CCG or Verifiable Claims Working Group mailing list.
Thank you. So continuing on, we're trying, your co-chairs are trying to find various ways to manage the group items. So each week we are prioritizing a number of them, and we basically use the issues tracker to do that. So that is the issues tracker that we're using. So we basically have two items that have kind of risen up to the top that we'd like to ask people about. The first one is the linked data key format registry. So it needs a repo and it needs to move from wherever it is to that repo. Kim has kind of temporarily taken on the assignee for that, but probably we need to have somebody to, from that community to do the repo and step text. Do we have any? Go ahead, Kim. Go.
Yeah, the thing with that one, let me see. Okay, so that one I just didn't notice because we had a link in place. It looked like we were all set up, but I noticed the link is just going to a place in the did spec repo. So it looks like maybe it was just started as a separate page just for purposes of keeping it separate, but we probably didn't go through the work item proposal process. That's fine. All we have to do is figure out who the owners are. I'll set up the repo no matter what, but I did want to clear it and make sure, one, it's okay to move that file out from that repo and to like who the owners are. Once we have that, I can update that issue or rather create the repo and close out that issue. So if anyone knows sort of the history behind that file, the LD key format HTML file, just ping me or let me know, and then we can get started.
Okay, Manu, go ahead.
Hey, sorry, I've been having audio issues, so I only heard part of that. I think what we were trying to do with the linked data key formats is bundle them with the cryptographic suites, so I believe for like the linked data signature 2018, you would expect that specification to have the key format in it as well. So I think all we need is the CryptoSuite registries for like the signature formats, and the expectation is that those would also contain the key formats in there. So I don't think that we need another repo. We just need one registry, which is for the signature formats, and then the expectation is you find the key formats in the signature formats. Maybe we need an expansion to the table, but I might be totally off there. Kim, let me know if I'm like missing
okay.
something.
So if you can respond with your question, or if you have answers to your own questions in that issue, we're just bringing it up in order to get some clarity. The other one, which is, sort of the ongoing discussions about PR changes to DIDs. There are still open PRs, Kim, was our intent to talk about them separately from the questions that we're having at the end of this meeting on
This one was more of a check mark. I think that we did this. I think that we can just close this out because the whole idea I thought was to figure out how to go through closing the PRs, and that's sort of what we've been doing right now. So
okay.
I think we can close it.
So Manu, do you have any, kind of what's still open or needs to be resubmitted? Are we okay? How's our kind of process on that?
I'm sorry, I'm having audio issues.
What's still open? What do you need to process?
Maybe we need to take this offline. Sorry, my audio issues are causing me to like miss major parts of the conversation. The status is it's just it would be great if someone could pick it up and run with it. We need the linked data crypto suite to be updated, and they've kind of been languishing because we've been spending so much time on the verifiable credentials spec and the DID spec and all that kind of stuff, and as a result those specs are hurting. So I mean, if anyone is looking for something fairly easy to volunteer for, and if you have some background in implementing the CryptoSuite stuff or want to learn, please volunteer, and if we don't get a volunteer, it's just going to languish for a bit more until it becomes a higher priority.
Okay, thank you. So right now it doesn't look like we're going to close that, but those were the two that we identified as priorities to talk about here and try to get, drum up some support. Kim, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Manu was responding to the previous one, number 56, not 42. 42 is the one that has to do with, you know, it's called finding a discussion on the did PRs to close it out. We opened it last fall. So my claim is that we can close it out. I'll put a note in there to Manu just to make sure that he's okay with that. But otherwise, I think I'll just close it out because we're already talking about it. So okay. I think it's done.
Yeah, agreed. Sorry. I didn't realize we were talking about 42, but agree with Kim.
Okay.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, so the bulk of the meeting that remains is our main topic. Michael Herman basically presented a bunch of changes, suggestions, issues, et cetera, to the draft DID spec as somebody new to the community, you know, and fresh eyes. You know, some of them were very interesting. Some were, you know, maybe problems of that, you know, we haven't written something up accurately or, you know, the draft was not up to date to the current, you know, thoughts since it's kind of been, you know, languishing since early in the year. He then later posted these four as being kind of central to kind of the gestalt of a number of his issues rather than dealing with the individual issues. So the first one is issue number 157. You know, we ordered the four, these four issues, to talk about them first. So the underlying this here is, you know, are we really defining the purpose of this DID draft clearly? Have we really firmly defined our target audience and, that it basically has some, challenges for things? So, Michael, would you know, maybe say a little bit more, and be careful and don't dive into the other issues. Let's just focus on the purpose of the spec and the target audience. Michael?
Okay. Hi, I'm here. Yeah, so I just kind of became aware I was going to be talking about this about an hour or 2 hours ago. So I think the thing to focus on is, in terms of the discussion around this one, is who is the audience for this specification? I guess part of the background, and Chris, you did a good job of kind of recapping that, is, you know, I came to this project, this effort, as well as, you know, the Indie Sovereign, the sister Indie Sovereign effort, as a blockchain architect and developer, hands-on developer, wanting to use all of these neat things for a specific purpose around non-fungible entities. I'm not going to go into that, but that just kind of gives you a little bit of background. And to be honest, it was kind of impermeable trying to understand how all of this worked. And so there's the list of issues. And I think part of it specifically related to the DID spec is I'm not sure who it was written for. After I went through the whole spec and found all of those issues, I'm not sure who it was trying to satisfy or who it was trying to delight. So in the middle of that first, you know, opening comment there, I said, you know, is the primary audience for the draft spec software people, builders, specifically software architects, software developers, and, you know, application developers building on top of the platform, as well as, you know, platform maintainers. And so I think that's one place that we can talk about. And then the next one, once we understand who we're talking to, is the purpose of the DID spec to talk about DIDs and DID documents, et cetera, as a lower level technology? I find that in the spec, there's a mixture of things like subjects and this and higher level protocols and stuff. But are we talking to software developers? And fundamentally, are we talking about, you know, DIDs as a low level technology? And when you combine those, we need a high level of precision if if those are the groups and that's what we're trying to talk about. So I'll open it to the floor, Chris, for comments.
Okay. Drummond, why don't you start us off?
Okay, that means I have to find the mute button. Okay. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Good. So my first answer is, even though the very, very first version of the spec written before it was submitted to the credentials community group was a wider audience, and that's probably some source of the problem here. It was an audience to whom the whole concept of decentralized identity was new, and therefore we were having to do a little bit of introducing the paradigm. Otherwise, I think the answer is very straightforward. Like any other, if I turned around and asked you, Michael, what's the audience for any other W3C spec, what would you say?
Well, more likely developers, yeah.
Well, I would actually say it's all W3C specs, as with almost any specifications from Open Standard Body, are not actually written just for developers. They are written for developers. Developers absolutely have to understand them. They have to be precise, all of those things. But there's also, and I've been doing, you know, standards for almost 20 years now, there's an audience that there are ancillary audiences that are not actually going to implement the spec, but they need to understand what's the importance of this, what's the relevance of this. So I always, when I'm tackling, especially the opening part of a spec, try and just, and I think Manny was another, past master at this, trying to provide just enough context so that you can sort of detect the relevance. Often you then link off to other things that people can read about that, and then you dive right down into the precision that you're asking for.
Here, and to add a little more focus to discussion. So I'm not talking about the breadth or the scope of the spec. I'm talking about where is the bow of the ship headed. Like in that first opening paragraph, I talk about who is specifically the primary target audience, not to the exclusion of others, but who do we need to satisfy? And if it's developers, we need to be extremely precise about what it is we're talking about. I'm not talking about scope or breadth, in terms of Chris's comment, not to go outside of what we're talking about here.
Well, I mean, I don't think anyone on this call is going to push back on precision. I mean, yes, of course we want to be precise. And if the things that are not precise, then we need to go in and make sure that that's the case.
You can't be precise unless you have a primary target audience that you're targeting.
So,
implementers.
Yeah. So, Manu, why don't you go next? I'm going to wrap this.
Sure. I just wanted to agree with Drummond. So, if we had to pick one, Michael, it would be implementers, full stop. The problem that a lot of W3C specs and ITF specs, for that matter, have is that because they focus on implementers, they start layering in an enormous amount of technical jargon, which has another negative effect, which is you don't ground the work in what you're trying to accomplish. So what we try to do is we focus the thing on implementers, but write it in a way just about anybody, they don't have to be developers, someone that wants to just kind of understand what the document, what the specification is about, can read at least the first five pages and get a general understanding. And after that, we start getting much more precise, much more refined, until we get to the point where an implementer can look at, the middle section to the bottom sections of the specification and actually write interoperable software as a result of that. Now, I think, the reason you had such a challenge reading the document is that we haven't done that yet, right? As Drummond mentioned, we were, this was being written at a time where nobody knew what a decentralized identifier was or what it was trying to do. Or blockchains were new, all that kind of stuff. So I do agree that we have to do quite a bit of rewriting to focus on implementers and make sure that the introductory portions of the document are readable by a wide audience, and then get very, very focused on implementers and the language that they would expect to see in a specification such as this.
Yeah. So, one of my things is that, some of the people that are reading the spec are trying to decide, is this going to be something I am going to be funding or managing or whatever to this? There are others who read this spec in order to stop it. They don't like blockchain. They don't like, they have various assumptions about things, and we have to at least try to mitigate their assumptions. I had a conversation last night and this morning with Brian Ford, a leading privacy researcher at EPFL, who was very kind of critical of things and, you know, read the DID doc, and he just missed some very important concepts. And you know, he gets all concerned about adjacent concepts, like including stuff about verifiable claims and the fact that, you know, anybody issuing a verifiable claim has personal data. Well, that's kind of out of scope of DIDs. That's not, but we kind of sometimes make DIDs to be like, you know, the overarching thing of the entire architecture of decentralized identity. So we've got to do better with those opening things. We have to make it such that people just don't, that we can overcome some of the automatic resistance to blockchain and or other common objections to DIDs in that front section, because, then the implementers aren't going to be given the resources to do the work to actually implement it. So it is important that that front section be, fit that group of people. Unfortunately, I would love to just say we can just say everybody understands it and we're just going to, do the wire bits, but it's not going to happen. Justin, go ahead.
Yeah, so basing this observation on my experience with writing specs, if your target really is implementers, then you need to treat the specification language as if it were a programming language that's going to execute on the most non-deterministic runtime platform ever invented, which is to say engineers. And also, keeping in mind everything that, that is shoring up the argument for precision and focus, which was made previously. But following along to what Chris was just saying, it is often very tempting to try and use a standard specification as a place to kind of make your point about the greater vision and value of the things that you're trying to define in here. And while it's useful to make a quick and concise argument to that in an introduction, I would very strongly caution the working group here against spending a lot of time and words on doing that. I've dealt with a number of draft specifications where it was impossible to get through the dense philosophical arguments about how great something was in the introduction when I was just trying to say, I just want to build a thing to see if it works.
Okay. So we've had some discussion about that. I think, there's a balance between those two things. I think we, need to change that balance, and, that's where we're moving. So I'm now going to move to the second issue of this set, which is the scope of normative, which I feel like is a good follow-on to it, which is issue number 58. Again, we sort of have some questions about how well we're defining stuff that is normative and around DIDs, and there's also a heck of a lot of stuff that's informative, and when do we say, oh, even that is too out of scope and we need to do it, need to rethink how we're doing it. Michael, once again, I'll let you open up the conversation and go from there.
Okay, for those of you that looked at it before this morning, it was updated in the last half an hour of the diagram. This is actually a very large topic, so I'm not sure how much we can do in this session now, but let me just provide a little bit of background, and then you know, people can discuss it, and then maybe we have to cleave off and do something. So there's the general comment. It's addressed other places as well. 157 and 138, and I believe there's another community member who maybe has yet another one where he highlighted that. Maybe it was 138. What you see here in the diagram, I'm not going to go into the whole thing, but this is kind of my view of what I call the Indy Sovereign Architecture Reference Model. This is like the whole ecosystem. So part of the, I thought it might be useful to guide the normative versus informative discussion by focusing on that part of this architecture model that potentially could be part of the DID spec. So it's pretty small to read. If you click on the link underneath it, to the one that's much more readable. And I also have narrative text that describes every one of those bullets. I'm going to slide down to the very bottom of that issue, 158. And that's something I created actually yesterday. I think it's a big topic, probably too big for this call, but we've been, you know, talking about the structure of the, you know, the future state of the draft DID specification and what it should look like. And Manu has been very instructive in providing good guidance around that, separating the identifier from the protocol, from the data model, et cetera, et cetera. This is actually a start to that. And it's this diagram that drove the changes in the top diagram. I could probably go on for a couple of days on this, but maybe I'll just hand it back to you, Chris, at this point.
Okay. So let's see what the queue is going on. Manu, go ahead.
It's true that, you know, this the ecosystem can get very large very quickly, and the specification should really focus on the core concept. So I think I'm looking at 158. Michael, you marked it as kind of like a duplicate of 138. I'm still guessing what you're searching for here is what's normative, what's informative. And I have an answer, but I just want to make sure that I understand the issue correctly before I respond. So the question you're asking is, based on the spec that we have today, what is expected to be normative and non-normative in the future? Is that correct?
Well, yeah, like just to go back to the title, it's what is normative and obviously in scope, what is informative and in scope, and then what's just plain out of scope. So it really is an umbrella a little bit to the restructuring question as well.
Right. So right now, you know, so everything's kind of in motion right now. So I'm going to talk about sections of the specification that may not exist yet. But the expectation is the beginning of the spec is going to have an introduction that's non-normative. You're just elaborating about the ecosystem and that kind of stuff, enough to ground you know, what the spec is trying to accomplish. The next section, typically the expectation is we will talk about the decentralized identifier itself, like the A, B, and F for it, the specific syntax for what makes a DID URL a DID URL. There will be a section around data model, which is the data model of the DID document, what you get back when you dereference one of these decentralized identifiers. That will be an information model. There will be no concrete syntax in that section, but we will still say normative things about, you know, what certain features in the data model are attempting to do, like this, you know, use this for authorization, use this for services, things of that nature. After that, the expectation is that we will talk about concrete syntaxes. Again, that is going to be normative. So if you want to express a DID document in this way, in this syntax, this is exactly how you would do that. And then after that, we get into did method specs. I'm less sure about this section because we do want to say, hey, if you're going to do a did method, if you're going to write a did method spec, it has to at least mention these things. It must do these things. But as you know, those of you that have written specs before can say that's it's very difficult language to write because it's arguable that you can and can't write tests for that kind of thing. So you know, when it comes to the W3C bar for what normative statements mean, you typically, if it doesn't boil down to a test at some point, then it's somewhat of a useless normative statement. Again, that's kind of a philosophical argument. You can go either way with that. But that's why, you know, what you have to have specifying a did method spec is a bit up in the air. I think most people in the community would like to see us be a bit stronger with that language than just saying, you know, these are just suggestions, you can break them if you want. I think we do want very specific requirements there. And then we get into sections like did resolution, where we will probably defer to another specification. We might outline the types of things that happen during resolution, but the did spec itself is not going to talk about did resolution. That's a separate specification. It's happening somewhere else. And I think it, like out of all the sections that are in the spec right now, I didn't cover all of them, but it, you know, speaking in a very broad brush way, I think that's where we want to end up. Now the question is, do you think that that is an appropriate place to end up? And I see Drummond, I think, on the queue. Yep.
Let's do Drummond, and then we'll let Mike Bull do one last response, and then we'll move to the next one.
Manny said a good part of what I was going to say. I do feel one of the benefits we have, Michael, now is when we wrote the first spec, we were only anticipating various did method specs, and we didn't have any experience directly with them. Now we do. And so I think that our ability to identify what they do and do not need to do and sort of have a little bit a better, clearer set of guardrails. There's a very clear precedent for what we're doing, right? The URI spec, RC3986, you know, is a generic syntax for URIs, and then you go and write your specific scheme spec. And we make that analogy. I think we should keep that analogy in the current spec. So the difference is they all use the same underlying protocols, they're strictly identifier specs, and in this case, you associate the method spec, which is a more complex animal. So it's absolutely in scope to say what are the requirements of did method specs, but as Manu said, we can only be so precise about that. So I think we should be as clear as we can, and then just draw the line and make it, what we can make it clear is, what's the scope of this spec versus what is the scope of did method specs? And I'm constantly educating people on that topic. And I also agree, I really like the fact that we've gotten to the point of recognizing resolution spec as a separate, separate work item, separate spec. So I think the lines are going to be clearer as we go through this effort. Last thing I'll say is I'm looking forward to tackling some of this at rebooting. I think we have a critical mass of folks that are interested in these, driving these forward there.
Okay. So, Herman, we've got two more issues, but I wanted to give you a chance to respond to Manu and Drummond.
Oh, well, first of all, I just want to thank Manu again for just highlighting, you know, a good positive direction. I'll just close with saying, you know, the devil's going to be in the details, as it usually is. And if anybody has any comments on that diagram in the bottom of 158, Drummond and I and others are discussing it in issue 151. If you want to add your comments there, it would be, I'd appreciate it.
Okay. Well, speaking of which, 151 is the third of four items. So this dives a little bit more into the formal concept of the data model. We kind of talk about it, but then we don't talk about it. We don't name it, you know, why, et cetera. So there's been some, you know, comments about, you know, on the list and in this issue about, you know, DIDs and DID documents and, you know, et cetera, that is definitely been causing some confusion in the community. Michael, you want to say a little bit more? Go ahead.
Yeah, so if we stay, you know, following Chris's good guidance and staying on topic, it's really about the fact that it mentions that there's a decentralized identifier data model and there really isn't one missing. Manu's already highlighted that. So, you know, if we were just dealing with the title of this issue, then that would be done. The rest of it kind of wandered. The conversation in the rest of the discussion of this issue kind of wandered. In terms of being efficient today, I'm satisfied with the fact that we're going to, you know, work on having this, you know, data model, information model, and then let's save the, I'm going to suggest that we save the rest of the conversation that's, I think, a good conversation, but we could save that for another time. But it's up to what people want to say.
Drummond, go ahead.
No, actually, I think someone didn't. I didn't put myself back on the queue. So, yeah, I just think someone took him. Okay.
Manu, you're next.
Just to talk a bit more about the data model, I think the, you know, the majority of the last two times we went around and did a bunch of edits to the DID spec, I don't think we were quite to the point. Can people hear me?
Now we can, but big gap there.
Okay, sorry.
Actually, I was able to hear Manu just fine, so I think it's mixed as to who's hearing what.
Okay. Yeah, I did as well.
The last time we did a big revision on the DID spec, I don't think that we had clarity on how you talk about a data model and a syntax and make the test suite work, how it all fits together. And now that we have experience with putting together the verifiable credentials data model spec, I think we do have some clarity there, right? So we can say we've gone through an official working group process where we wrote a spec that looks like this, and we got through it where the group feels happy with what we created, right? So, Michael, I'm adding a link into the RSC channel to the VC data model spec, which basically does it breaks things down in the way that I mentioned before. So short introduction in the beginning, then you talk about the data model, you introduce concepts in the information model, data model, then you start talking about what the syntax looks like. You talk about basic concepts, advanced concepts, and I'm not saying that the DID spec is going to match exactly that format, but I think that there were lessons learned by doing that that we can apply to the DID spec that then results in, you know, like Justin was saying earlier, things that you can write code against, things that are testable in a test suite that will survive the W3C standardization process and all that kind of stuff. But one of the biggest things that we focused on in the VC data model spec was the data model. And so I think, you know, if you look at that specification, you can hopefully piece together what we're trying to go for with respect to the DID spec. You noted before, we're not quite there yet. But at least there's, like, we have a blueprint for what we want, and that's what we're going to try and work towards, and would love to hear your feedback on if you think that's the right direction or you've seen something else work elsewhere.
Oh, anybody else? Or Chris, can I just close with a quick one?
Yes, go ahead.
So I'm all cool with that, and I added a comment to 151 pointing to you to that link, Manu. The place that the conversation wandered to that maybe we can table for next week or the week after that is whether DIDs can be used without DID documents. That's a big, long discussion. I just want to table that because I think it still needs to be resolved. People think it's historically has been resolved, but I think there's a strong case DIDs are useful without DID documents. If we can table that for the future, I'd like to do that.
Okay. Although it is part of the next and final of the of your four issues, which is 155, which then links to 159. So in that, we're really talking about, is it a URI, is it a URL, is it a URN, and all of that type of stuff. And we keep on coming back to, it is and it isn't. And one of the things that's unique about it is it only resolves to a DID document. And that's caused some, foundational questions. I know in my own interpretation, even if somehow there isn't a DID document, one is being kind of created implicitly based on the DID identifier itself. Even in a CID case, or like with Bitcoin, you can do ones and it gets all the information from the blockchain, not from, it's what we call an implicit DID, not the extra information that is, endpoints and additional keys and things of that nature, but it always creates something, that the app can use. I think, another thing that kind of drives me here a little bit is, who is the consumer of the DID object? And maybe we aren't being clear about that, or even that matter for who is the creator of the DID object, the resolver, how do you trust it and whatever. So I think that's a related thing. So Michael, are there other things in this, 155 leading to 159? That we can talk about in 10 minutes. Go ahead.
I can be quick again. So where you led us is in a good direction, Chris, and I'm just highlighting that because that's really what the back end of 151 is talking about, where I said the conversation kind of wandered in a good way. So, for example, I've been working with the getting started Python script. And that's a great example of the end-to-end, Alice buys a car scenario, gets a transcript, gets a job application, does the loan application, et cetera, et cetera. It's a soup-to-nuts scenario that uses DIDs, but doesn't use DID documents. And I guess that's my canonical example of saying that, DIDs are useful and valuable by themselves. And that's what that led me to create the document at the bottom of 151 that says there's really a kind of a seven-layer model, a seven-tier model. And I know, I got a huge mountain to, push that diagram over, but I just think this comment that keeps coming back that, DIDs are only DIDs if they're resolvable to DID documents. I'm questioning that. Hello?
Yes. Okay, Manu, go ahead.
So I think this is one of those discussions that we do need to have in the group because there are nuances here that are important, and I think some of us are having language mismatches and other ones are having conceptual mismatches. So I think it's a good thing to revisit this and then make it absolutely crystal clear in the specification. I've heard arguments both ways. DIDs are useful in and of themselves, that you don't necessarily need to resolve to a DID document. Others have said, why does resolution matter as long as you can generate a DID document? So maybe you don't go through a resolver, but there's an algorithm that you can use to transform a DID into a DID document, while other people are saying, but what about key rotation? Like, you can't do key rotation if you don't do You know, you can't protect against double spend and key rotation if you don't have a DLT that you put this stuff on. So, you know, absolutely not. You cannot have, you know, DIDs without a DID document that's on a ledger. So what these are highlighting is just, they're just different use cases that we need to talk about. I think the community is still we're not on the same page when it comes to the strict definition of a DID. We are kind of there from a syntax perspective, but not necessarily from a what should you be able to do with a DID perspective. So anyway, just mentioning that I don't expect it to be a short conversation. I expect it to take, you know, multiple weeks for us to get to language that everyone's happy with. And it will also include quite a bit of debate as well.
Right. And there's some history here where, you know, in many ways, Drummond and I started with what we called the CID, which was just a bare public key of some kind, maybe with some other information. And, you know, way back when, gosh, it's been 3 years or more, you know, we began to discover the real weaknesses to this, and a lot of the criticism from other systems of this, that it, you know, it wasn't a good enough improvement to solve the problem. So, but then we, you know, that's when we did the DBOs, and we have all this old language that keeps on cropping in of things. So, you know, I think the co-chairs are in agreement that we probably need to dedicate a discussion about this upcoming. Ken, you're next in queue.
I was just going to agree with what Manon said, is that I don't think there is complete consensus on this, and that if DIDs are about control and proving control of an identity, then using them to create namespaces muddies that water quite a bit.
Can you clarify that a little bit more as an example? What do you mean to create namespaces?
If you're removing the key aspect of it, you don't need a DID document to store keys or anything like that. You're no longer providing control. Then the main purpose of the DID, which was to establish control over an identity, is weakened. There are other objects that need resolution and namespace, such as schemas and credential definitions and all sorts of other things that may be required in a particular ecosystem. But if you water down the DID and remove the necessity for the key, the ability to describe the keys and obtain them and prove possession, then you've lost something from the DID and the main purpose for which the DIDs were created in the first place. You could
And I'm fine with there being a separate spec, a separate spec on some of these other things. But anyhow, we'll decide. So Drummond, you're next.
All I want to do is reinforce. First of all, I actually am one of the folks that whenever I hear control of an identity, I back off, Ken, and say control of an identifier. Yes, that is typically associated with the things we call identities, but I think we can keep the DID spec down to control of an identifiers. I'm also reinforcing, I found it fascinating as I was doing my response to the thread on the list last night on the subject, you know, really, really thinking about the abstraction that a DID provides. And the different ways you can narrow that abstraction and still get use out of it. So I agree with Manu, and I think Michael's raised an issue that we do need to tackle in this next, you know, really a refinement of the spec. You know, as we nail it down, I think we will get to a common understanding of the value that we've produced here, because, you know, I don't want anyone to lose sight of the fact that the interest and the infrastructure now being, planned to be either being built or planned to being built on DIDs is extraordinary. And so we've got a gem here that we don't want to, somehow flaw in the polishing process, if to use an analogy.
Okay.
That's it.
Michael, I think you have the wrap on these four issues. This issue first, and then if you have any closing things, and then we'll call it for the day.
Okay. First of all, I think the discussion has been really good, just as the overall feedback. Specifically on this comment, going back to Madhu's, I agree with what he said, and I think the main point I'd like to make, just in the context of the conversation today, is we should try not to be exclusionary in terms of any of these use cases. And I think this seven-layer model is a way of addressing that kind of capability. I think it was Ken was talking, and like layer three in the model, and I've made up a term here, I've called them verifiable DIDs. That's a DID, that has an IM ledger or equivalent, on the ledger, is a way of, kind of addressing that middle ground. And it's not just a namespace thing. That is something that can be trusted and something that's verifiable. So again, I don't want to impart on that discussion, but I think we can be more inclusive in terms of all the different things that have been talked about during this last issue.
Okay, well, thank you very much, everybody. It's 10 o'clock. I think we're going to revisit this most likely again next week. I think this issue of CID, verifiable ID, DID, implicit DID, DID documents, et cetera, that whole kind of spectrum of things and where do we want to draw lines is a good topic. It's possible we may have to schedule it one further week away. The chairs will decide that in the next couple of days. Thank you very much, and continue the discussions on the list. We invite topic papers in the Rebooting Web of Trust repo, even if you are not going to Rebooting Web of Trust. If you want to influence the conversation, and it's relevant to how we're deciding what topics to challenge us at Rebooting, please post a topic if you think it'll be useful to us. That's it for now. See you next week.
All right. Can someone pull the log for the, I don't know how to do the pull request for the, all right, great.
Okay, thanks.